We know that there has been a call from the mayor, the current administration, some city council leadership, the governor, even columnists from the Hearst Media to end this mayoral bid. For those that are calling for my withdrawal, I would like to remind them that there was a court order for a mayoral primary and general election in 2024.
So it is official. You're hearing just a snippet from a big announcement in the city of Bridgeport yesterday. There will be a general election redo in the city for the mayoral race. John Gomes, who you just heard from, is vowing to fight on to become the next mayor of Bridgeport, but also, it sounds like, hold lawmakers in the state accountable to pass legislation tightening absentee ballot processes, for example, and restoring voter confidence in Bridgeport and throughout the state. Joining us now is John Gomes for more. Hey, John, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you here, and thank you for trusting WICC to come on and speak publicly after that big announcement yesterday. I know we didn't connect on the air. We did talk off air a little bit. But after last week's primary redo, Mayor Ganim took home more votes on the machines and more votes with absentee ballots. What made you want to press on with now a general election redo?
Well, since the beginning of this campaign, it was about the people. It was about the resounding concern that there needs to be a change in leadership. This decision was made along with our supporters because when we look at the economic situation in Bridgeport, the lack of quality of education, and the low-paying job that's impacting our quality of life, the supporters feel that change needs to come. Many of our supporters were turned away at different schools, different polls. In two schools alone, 40 of my supporters were turned away. So we cannot say there was a transparent win, a win that was convincing, because the tactics and the games are still being played, both on absentee ballot, and we see it now at the polls. And our supporters deserve an opportunity to elect the mayor that they want, but more importantly, a general election gives all voters of Bridgeport an opportunity to come out and vote for who they feel should represent them and change the future of Bridgeport as it's impacting our quality of life here.
So, John Gomes, are you now running as an independent?
I am running on the same line that I ran in the November election, which is an independent, on the independent line. But obviously, I represent all voters of Bridgeport. For me, it's not about party lines, but it's about what's just and fair for the changes that we need in Bridgeport. And I would ask that the voters of Bridgeport on February 27 come and look for my name online. I would believe it probably be C, and support me so we could change Bridgeport together.
Are you concerned at all, John Gomes, that the independent party pulled their endorsement from you? And again, kind of reiterating what you had said in that soundbite in the beginning, there were a lot of calls for this to just end, including even Governor Lamont saying, let's just move on. The independent party saying, we don't think this is good for Bridgeport. Are you concerned at all about that?
Well, although there has been some difference with the local support here, I have strong support from the state committee, independent party. They were at the press conference and they're behind me 100%. This is not the time to move on. This is the time more than ever to come and be united. We have to speak when it fits everyone. We cannot select an opportunity to speak. We cannot come out now and say, let's unite, when we have to remember how we got to the situation. It's about voter suppression. It's about civil rights violation, which was caused by my opponent. Although I respect the opinion of the governor, we cannot push away my supporters, my voters, because they want an equal opportunity. From the governor perspective, you know, I feel there's somewhat of a conflict pushing it to end this because, you know.
Like a personal conflict?
I believe there is a personal conflict when you look at his position and what he's saying. The voters of Bridgeport, all of them have not spoken out. And, you know, going back into that and information, there is a consulting company that were hired that service his campaign, Gannon campaign, that share mutual interests. So we have to be transparent on everything we're saying, because we have to represent all voters of Bridgeport. We cannot disenfranchise the voters of Bridgeport at this time. And coming together now, what happened in September when the city was truly divided, when evidence was put out there about voter suppression, where we did not hear from any of our city, state elected official, because that's when we needed to unite Bridgeport more than ever, because we recognized the difference in the direction it was going.
So we have John Gomes here, who officially announced that he is going to continue in the race to become the next mayor of Bridgeport. So that is going to force a general election redo, which is set for February 27th. And as you just mentioned, John Gomes, this is going to be for every voter in Bridgeport. So with the primary, obviously, unless you were a registered Democrat, you had no say in what was going to go on with this race. And now forcing a general election redo, everybody can vote. So here's my question for you. Is with the primary redo last week, I was actually kind of surprised with how many people did show up for that. But are you going to do anything differently? I was a little taken aback to see that the number of in-person votes dropped for you in comparison to Mayor Ganim, because that was something that you were stronger in for both the primary, the initial primary, and the initial general election. And it seemed that that table switched places on you with this past primary. Do you plan to do something different to bring your numbers back up for the general?
Well, just to give you a quick example, there's 22 poll locations in Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. In just two locations, 40 of my supporters were turned away for their party affiliation. Unbeknown to them, their party affiliation from Democrat went to an affiliate, and some to even Republican. We had people within our campaign that had voted on the September and November election that couldn't vote now because for some reason, whether it's the motor vehicle they went for, their license or their change of ID, that were changed to an affiliate, and others who were miraculously changed to another party. So when you have two schools that turned away or two polling locations that turned away 40 people, multiplied on average by 22 and look at the winning percentage on the polls. So there's a lot of questions that needs to be answered as to what happened. On our phone calls, for every 10 calls, 7 calls were coming back very positive. And the outcome does not really justify the number of calls that we made and outreach to our voters.
John Gomes officially announced that he is not done fighting to become the next mayor of Bridgeport. So there will be a general election redo. It's happening February 27th. It is open to all registered voters in the city of Bridgeport. Gomes is challenging Mayor Joe Ganim, as well as Republican candidate David Hertz. As you know, Lamon Daniels announced this week that he will not continue in the race. John Gomes is here this morning. And John, you have said since the very beginning, you are Bridgeport. You went through the school system. You live in the city. You want to clean up the political issues that even Governor Lamont has said have been going on in Bridgeport for years and has to stop. That being said, though, the timing of this election redo is happening during the legislative session. So I'm curious, is there more to your announcement than just running for mayor? Are you sending a message to state lawmakers?
Well, we've been trying to reach the lawmakers since early September, asking them for their input and to their interjection as far as what's going to happen in the electoral process for the September and November election. We understand the trends of absentee ballot impact in Bridgeport. If you look at our history, 2017 city council race, 2022 state representative race, and now in 2023 race had to go to court. And three Superior Court judges asked for redo because of impact. During this session, we are asking the legislative body to present stronger reform against absentee ballot fraud, because we need that. We need to bring a sense of transparency and integrity to the voters of Bridgeport so they can feel confident when they walk into that poll that their vote truly, truly counts. And we need that. We need that because or else this cycle is going to repeat if blind eyes are turned. We cannot, or elected officials cannot speak against this only when it's convenient. They have to remember that they are representing Bridgeport as a whole. And we need change. We need support from our elected official in order to move Bridgeport in a different direction.
So let's say in this upcoming legislative session, because I will say ever since the videos came out in September of 2023, especially the Republican Party, Republican lawmakers in Connecticut have been outraged about voters having confidence in the election process, and they've been asking for tightening of absentee ballots to kind of go back to the restrictions we had before COVID happened. Would you say, I mean, obviously the goal is you want to be the next mayor of Bridgeport, but if in this upcoming election, if that doesn't happen, are there still wins that can be accomplished, especially during this upcoming legislative session? Are there things lawmakers could do to still make big changes for not just Bridgeport, but really for any Connecticut resident who wants to know that elections are handled properly?
No, of course. There are changes that needs to be implemented. They have the information. They have the results from the past. They also know the impact that it's having on our community. We have a divided community right now. And without a doubt, with their input and stronger emphasis and speaking out, no more silence, we can really change the future, not only local, but send a message to outside the boundaries of the state of Connecticut. Yes, the Republicans have been very outspoken, and I'm looking for the Democrats to be outspoken. But again, to be outspoken as a whole, not in selected time or on certain things that there's some selective benefit, some selfishness to it. We need to represent Bridgeport as a whole. We are running because we are looking to change the direction of Bridgeport. We've been out there. We've talked to the residents. We've talked to the voters. Our message, our pillars remain consistent about what's impacting their lives because it's their hard-earned dollars that's not being valued. It's their children. It's our children that's going to the school that's subpar in quality. We are walking these streets feeling unsafe, and that's what we want to do in Bridgeport. We really want to change Bridgeport because, as you said, I am Bridgeport. I'm living in Bridgeport. I went to the school system here. I had a small business here. I'm struggling like those that are trying to pay their next bill. We have our supporters have put 120% in this because we believe in Bridgeport. And collectively, we can be that difference. Today, and February 27, is not the day to talk about how tired we are, but it's to be invigorated by the injustice that we keep seeing in front of us where nothing continues to be done by those in position to change it. We are the people. We have that vote. We have that power and control. As long as we keep giving it away, they will take it, use it, and abuse it. And we have to change that narrative because if we don't take control of our future, no one will. And I, unselfishly, I'm asking those that are listening to look at what's been happening in their lives for the past 7 years, the past 20 years, and to truly say, Bridgeport is better. Bridgeport is not better.
John Gomes, I'm just curious really quick. I know we've run out of time, but are there any lawmakers you have faith in making this a priority? You know, like immediately I think to myself, a Steve Staffstrom or a Marilyn Moore. Are there any, especially with connections to Bridgeport, that you feel like you've connected with who are saying, trust me, this is going to be a priority during the legislative session?
I haven't been endorsed by any of those elected officials. I've been in conversation. So that's a conversation they need to have with their constituents because I've reached out. We've done the work. We brought evidence. We've asked for support. And up to this point, we've received silence. Silence speaks in numbers to me. It speaks in volume because in order to make a change, you have to be that voice that puts that change forward. And it's not about confidence about me and them. It's about the confidence that their electoral voters, their district have in them and the impact that their silence is having on their lives because we are living those consequences of the silence right now. again, it's about the hard-earned dollars that we have to pay in the high taxes here, the crimes that are in the streets, the quality of education that's not working for our children. The silence is destroying our city. And when we talk about united, we need to have a we need to be that voice as to uniting Bridgeport. And that voice needs to be loud. It has to represent all Bridgeport. We cannot now say, let's get this behind us and quit this race, while the fundamental issue that brought us to this point has not happened. We are here because my opponent and his operatives caused the situation. It was put on overwhelming evidence that was rendered by Judge Clark. It was in a 7-page verdict by Judge Clark that
which is what forced that primary redo and essentially forced a general election redo.
General election. Again, we have a history of 3 elections being impaired by fraud. So we cannot have our elected official continue to say nothing's happening and speak up when it's convenient. No, we are voting these elected officials in office to represent us at all times. We cannot just accept the glory. We have to accept the hardship and work through it.
Well, and John Gomes, unfortunately we have run out of time, but I know that we still have a few weeks before the general election redo, and I imagine you and I will be connecting again before we get to the polls on February 27th. Thank you so much for coming back on right after making your announcement this week. We appreciate it.
As always, thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing all the voters on the stomping ground as I knock down doors and we talk further about how we can come together and continue to fight to change Bridgeport and its leadership. Thank you again.
And we will continue to follow this story, of course, as we are now on our way to a general election redo, which is set for February 27th, open to every registered voter in the state of, or I should say, in the city of Bridgeport. Thank you so much, John Gomes. So we're literally just days away from the 2024 legislative session starting here in Connecticut. And lawmakers have a lot on their plate, right? They've got a lot of priorities they want to dive into. And I know that many of you, the listeners, really want to make sure that lawmakers don't forget about what has happened in recent months in the city of Bridgeport. And even if you don't live or work in Bridgeport, this has been a story that's gone national, and it's really made people feel like their faith in the voting system has been rocked. And I think it just, again, is a story that has come up in the past before. But now people are really hoping that lawmakers are zeroed in on this. And you're not alone in thinking that. In fact, former State Rep Jack Hennessy also wants to make sure that state leaders are focused on this problem, especially with what we saw happen in Bridgeport. If you're not familiar, Jack Hennessy, unless I'm totally off on my numbers, is still the longest serving state lawmaker from Bridgeport. He actually started serving as a state rep for the 127th district in 2005. Mr. Hennessy then ran for re-election and lost in the general election in November of 2022, and that was after he lost the Democratic primary. But I have seen that Jack has been writing. In fact, I saw an article a couple months back in the Connecticut Mirror, and it was in the CT Viewpoints, and it talks exactly about the absentee ballot scandal. And I wanted to get his point of view, especially ahead of the legislative session coming up. He joins us now. Jack Hennessy, welcome to WICC. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Jack, first of all, tell us a little bit about you. For those of us who have not gotten to know you because we didn't live in the city of Bridgeport or we were not your constituents during the time that you served, tell us about your role in government and serving the city of Bridgeport and how it came to an end kind of abruptly.
Well, first of all, I guess the beginning of my political career was as a petition candidate against endorsed candidate, and you're not really supposed to be able to beat the endorsed candidates, but I did back in 2004. So kind of started off on a contentious point because I just noticed that endorsed Democrats don't really have anybody running against them. And the reason is because everyone knows that this fraudulent absentee ballot. Anyway, I don't want to bury into that. 18 years as a legislator, and I guess my proudest things is being chair of the Veterans Committee for several terms. I'm a veteran, and so that was really important to me. And in 2008, I believe I passed the first environmental justice bill in the country. So, and then I was a deputy speaker for several terms with Joe Assimowitz. But I ran afoul of the present speaker of the House because of my opposition to his bill for religious exemption. They wanted to get rid of it for vaccinations. I thought it was important that parents have the ability to make important medical decisions for their children. And because of that, I got gerrymandered basically out of my district.
So what you're saying, Jack, not to interrupt you, but what you're saying is because you basically went against your party, the party majority.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, that's kind of the interesting thing about the legislature is that it's kind of ironclad rule. Mm. You know, for instance, the housing issues that we have or the property taxes that are so unfair. I mean, the disparity in education between one municipality to another is one of the worst in the country. And these issues continue. So we're facing going into session, and the chairs of the Government Administration and Elections Committee, which has auspices over voting, they haven't mentioned a word for it. And interestingly enough, the House Chair of GAE, Steve Stafstrom, he's from Bridgeport.
Right.
You'd think that maybe he'd have some kind of interest in cleaning up Bridgeport, but not a word. Not a word from him or from, you know, the governor on down.
I'm curious, and again, we have former state rep here, Jack Hennessy, who is the longest serving state rep for the city of Bridgeport. And we're just talking about the upcoming legislative session. Do you think, Jack, that anybody who's representing Bridgeport right now is focused on this? Like, I think about a Marilyn Moore, who was also in a situation very similar to John Gomes's right now, and is looking at absentee ballot fraud from the previous primary election in 2023. This is not new news in Bridgeport, is what I'm getting
at. Exactly. Three Superior Court judges have thrown out primaries. For the city council race in 2017, the judge threw out the three different primaries because of fraudulent absentee ballot harvesting. So obviously there's a pattern, and obviously this pattern is, once again, even though we have all the facts, you know, basically because of the video, they're still sweeping it under the rug. Governor Lamont wants to say, let's move on. Let's not have Bridgeport define the state of Connecticut. Well, unfortunately, there is a problem in Bridgeport, and it's because of this leadership that pays into it and benefits from it that maintains it. And, you know, if Ganim wins, this machine just continues and everybody stays happy. You know, all our state elected officials will be able to continue to pay into Park City Consulting, LLC, which gets, you know, over $100,000 for get out the vote operations in Bridgeport. You know, why does the governor pay into this? Why do our congressionals pay into Park City Consulting? What do they do for us?
So we have
this is like the big secret that everyone knows.
Hmm. And yet nobody's really at least talking about it from the state point of view or making any valuable changes.
They want to shut down. They want to shut down the ability for a general election in which all the people of Bridgeport get to vote. You know, right now we have a primary result that, you know, about 7-8% of the electorate gets to weigh in. Don't you think maybe everyone else, unaffiliates and independents and Republicans, should have a voice in deciding who the next mayor is?
We have former State Representative Jack Hennessy here, who is the longest-serving state lawmaker from Bridgeport. Began serving as a state rep for the 127th District in 2005, but lost in his reelection bid in 2022. We're talking about not only the upcoming legislative session and lawmakers focusing on crooked politics and just making sure that voting can, you know, the faith of voting and the systems can be restored in the average Connecticut resident, but also whether or not there should be a general election redo in the city of Bridgeport. It sounds like, Jack, you're saying you want a general election redo.
Well, I certainly would support that. I think that the, you know, obviously the voters of Bridgeport have not had their voice heard. The primary that was thrown out in September, and you know, the perpetrators of the harvesting, they're still out. Wanda Jeter is still on paid vacation harvesting, you know, doing the exact same thing. I mean, so yeah, I think Bridgeport deserves to have a general election.
Well, we will see what John Gomes decides to do. He's got until February 1st to make a decision, so the clock is ticking. And in the meantime, if you believe lawmakers are sweeping this under the rug, which I don't totally disagree with you. I actually said on my show earlier this week that it feels like ever since last week's primary, I'm getting that same vibe that you mentioned. Governor Lamont, let's move on. I don't hear a lot of chatter. I brought this up to Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewitz. I've talked about this with the Secretary of the State. Not even so much about laws, but what are we going to do, for example, trying to encourage people to go to the polls? I've even gone to the federal level and asked that question, Jack Hennessy. I've literally talked to Senator Blumenthal and Congressman Jim Himes, and I have said, we're not living in COVID anymore. I understand that we have one of the oldest populations, I understand, is in Bridgeport. However, I also understand that before COVID came about, when I tried to get an absentee ballot because I was in school out of state for college, you had to kind of, I don't want to say jump through hoops. It certainly wasn't hard, but you had to explain why you needed an absentee ballot. And now all you have to do is blink. And anyone can fill out an absentee ballot. I mean, there's even question of people who are not American citizens filling out absentee ballots. So I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of that, but I've asked that question of state lawmakers and even federal lawmakers for Connecticut. What are we going to do to encourage people to be going to the polls in person to try to get away from ballot harvesting, which, by the way, is illegal in the state of Connecticut. I don't care if it's legal anywhere. No, it's not legal here. So we can't just keep pretending, oh, it's okay. We've done it for years. No, it's illegal. You can't do it. Period.
Right.
So it does feel like you're saying, this essence of lawmakers are going to sweep it under the rug. So what would your call to action be for Connecticut residents to demand change?
Well, there's two issues that you're talking about, and I think that absentee ballot harvesting should go away with early voting that's going to become available, in which people have 14 days, not just one day, to be able to cast their votes. And they should reinforce the law prior to COVID and say, you know, you can only use absentee ballots if you're disabled or out of state or out of town or whatever, and enforce that.
But do you think that is something that lawmakers would agree to at this point? Or do you think they're going to continue to use COVID? And again, I guess we're kind of assuming. So I don't want to put you in that position. But from your professional standpoint, though, and what you have seen in the politics of Connecticut as of recent, do you believe that this is something that they're going to actually tackle during the legislative session? Or is it going to have to come from, for example, probably the Republican Party? Maybe there are some Democrats, but maybe they don't want to end up in the same situation you were in, where they get, you know, they get voted out.
Right. Well, you know, I've discovered that the Republican Party, I've kind of hoped to have support from the Republican Party, like with this religious exemption law, and they completely didn't step up to the plate. So unfortunately, you know, this is a closed system in which the Bridgeport which the Democrats benefit from. But unfortunately, I'm afraid that the Republicans really don't stand up and, you know, demand justice, say, in Bridgeport. They're just as quiet also.
So it's not just a call to action, obviously, for listeners. It's really if you, no matter what party you are, which is something that I think we struggle with as a nation, is putting away your party affiliation and just doing the job of a lawmaker, which is to do what your constituents deserve. I mean, that's why you're elected in, right? I mean, that's why you're in the position of power you're in, is because you should be serving your public. So regardless of what your party is, you should be advocating for these changes.
And, I don't know, legislators represent 169 municipalities in Connecticut, and the great majority of them absolutely want nothing changed as far as zoning. They don't want their little, picture card worlds invaded. So, you know, there's a segregation within the urban areas, and that's going to continue.
Well, Jack Hennessy, I want to thank you very much for coming on and weighing in on again, this is an ongoing issue, but certainly from the local level, what's going on in Bridgeport and what should happen maybe with the redo of a general election, but also looking at the state matter and what should happen during the legislative session. And we will definitely see what happens. Please don't be a stranger. Would love to have you back on the show sometime.
Thank you so much, Melissa. And thank you for airing this issue that, unfortunately is just trying to be forgotten.
Well, we're certainly going to keep talking about it. That's for sure. Across all the shows here on WICC, I can promise you that. Jack Hennessy, thank you so much again for your time, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
So Frog Watch is back. I saw on my little headlines in my email earlier this week. I was very excited to see this. It's a really cool opportunity, actually, for you to get involved. It doesn't take an awful lot of effort, but your efforts really go a long way when it comes to one species population. So we've got Greg Dancho here to talk about this, and he joins us now. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Good morning. Hey, what was that thing in the sky this morning? It was orange and there was some blue out there.
I know.
It didn't last very long,
it was... it's this thing called the sun.
Wow.
It's been lacking for a while. But we've got some hope out there. That's for sure.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Amen. My Lord.
Well, you know, that this winter, it was mentioned this morning, we really had a kind of a dud of a winter so far. But spring is just around the corner,
mm-hmm.
and as we'll see tomorrow with Groundhog Day, we'll get an indication of that. But especially from Beardsley Park, we'll talk about that later. But the
I can't wait to hear about Beardsley Park. But no, let's start with frogs because
starting with the frogs. It's actually there are frogs that are already active. They're poking their heads out of the water because the weather's been so mild. They're actually bullfrogs that have been seen coming up this time of year, which is unheard of. So they're actually, must have heard about Frog Watch. So Frog Watch is a program that we have been running that was formulated by the AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, is a flagship citizen sciences project. Now that citizen science means that people can get involved. The family can get involved. The kids can get involved. Mom and dad, grandpa and grandma, they can get involved with actually collecting data for worldwide or nationwide collection of data of species that may need some help down the road. And Frog Watch is a flagship program that it started back in 1998. So from 1998 to now, we've collected a tremendous amount of data from this program. As a matter of fact, Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo leads the nation. I was going to say the zoo. I got to give our credit, kudos to the Peabody Museum in New Haven and the Maritime Aquarium down in Norwalk. So the aquarium in Norwalk, the museum, Peabody Museum in New Haven, and Beardsley Zoo have joined together as a chapter. And our chapter leads the nation in frog call observations.
That's amazing.
So,
that's really cool.
Country.
I love
Isn't
that.
Isn't that pretty cool
that we lead
the nation on that? And wow. what are we doing to lead the nation? Well, what we do is we train people. There's training programs coming up shortly that you'll be trained to identify a frog call.
And the trainings are both online and in person, right? So you have some flexibility.
Exactly.
That's
nice. Yep. Yeah. There's going to be a virtual training session on February 7th from 7 to 8:30. That's virtual training. You get that again on our website and on our Facebook page. We'll have that out there on our Facebook page. And then a hybrid training class will be done either at the zoo or online. You can do it online or at the zoo on March 4th. And again, 7 to 8:30 in the evening.
And you only have to do one session, right? You don't have to go to both.
Yep, you only have to do one session, okay. And you get to listen to the amount of frog calls that you potentially hear. And the idea here is that you go out to a specific area. You're not wandering around the state of Connecticut looking for frogs. You know, you're basically going to a wetlands area that's maybe near your house or in your neighborhood, right? And you go there on a regular visit, and you record what you hear.
But I'm curious about this. So we have Greg Dancho here of the Beardsley Zoo. Obviously, frogs and toads, they play a very vital role, serving as both prey and predator in our wetland ecosystems.
Exactly.
So they're a huge indicator for our environmental wellness, which is a big reason why Frog Watch USA is a thing. But how do you know, Greg, if you live near a wetlands? Because sometimes I think we live in our own little neighborhoods, our own little communities, but we don't actually know like the riches of our communities sometimes. People
exactly.
don't realize they
exactly.
have wetlands around. So is there a way to, first of all, figure out if you would be a good candidate for this? Or like where
well,
you could find it?
Yeah, they're definitely an endangered species, wetlands.
Yeah.
So there's two ways to do that. Some of them are in people's backyards. You don't know it. Normally look around for where water courses are. So some streams and brooks, that sometimes will come up into a marshy area, to form a wetland. You can also go to your town, and ask, their engineering department if they have maps. They do have maps that show where the wetlands are in the town. So you can
constantly, as you mentioned, this is an endangered species.
It's updated quite constantly. Yeah.
Okay.
It's updated quite constantly. And then just ask your neighbors, you know, look around. I mean, just before the season starts, you can kind of drive around and you know, roll down your window and take a listen out there and see what you hear. And those marshes and those wetlands are disappearing too. So I used to have one that was down behind a house when I was living in Bridgeport that I took the kids, my kids every spring to go see the toads and the spring peepers coming out for it as soon as the weather started getting warmer. And that marsh and that pond area is now filled in, which
wow.
is a natural progression on how ponds will turn into wetlands and wetlands will turn into, you know, solid soil over time. And that's an actual natural progression of a pond. But those wetlands are slowly disappearing for that reason and because we're developing areas that are taking away the wetlands. So, again, you said before that these studies are important. Their studies are important in many ways. One of the reasons they're important is that once you identify a wetland and you put data down on the frogs and toads that may be living there, now that's also added to those animals that live in that zone. So if there's development comes up, we can talk about, hey, we can't develop there. It is an active wetland. So very, very important for that.
Groundhog Day is such an interesting day. I don't want to say silly because it's not silly. It's like a tradition. But it is, you know, when you watch every single year as a news reporter, the Punxsutawney Phil, you know, the big reveal and everything every year. Sometimes you're like, what are we doing in America? What's happening? But anyways, I don't know. Sometimes you have those moments, Greg Dancho, where you're like, what is happening? But you know, we still do it. I get it. All right.
Well,
it's a tradition.
You know, it is interesting because Groundhog's Day, this year is going to be the 138th year.
Like we've done this for 138 years.
You know,
it's
so
interesting.
Think about that. You know, it started with a groundhog club. That were hunters. They were groundhog hunters. They formed a Punxsutawney Groundhog Club, and one of the members was the editor of the Punxsutawney newspaper, and he decided to make Punxsutawney Phil the groundhog to prognosticate the spring coming. So, yeah, kind of strange, isn't it?
It is a little bit. I mean, again, I'm not knocking anyone. I can't even lie and say that I wouldn't love to one day actually witness and go through the whole Punxsutawney Phil experience. Like I said, I've watched it on TV for however long I've been in news, and it's always intrigued me. And it's something. It's something.
They get 30,000 people coming to see that happen. 30,000 people.
That's what I mean. It's crazy. I mean, it's bizarre, but it's a thing. I don't know. Whatever. Well, but it is what it is. But I know
groundhogs are interesting. Groundhogs are interesting animals. They are. They are our largest squirrel. You know, they are part of the squirrel family, which prairie dogs are part of the squirrel family also. So they're the largest one. They actually go. They're the largest animal in the area that actually goes through complete hibernation. So they hibernate completely during the wintertime. Again,
wow.
This winter, maybe not so much, but they will winter.
When they pull him out, is he sleeping?
Well, when they pull him out, he's part of in human care. So he is not completely into a...
Okay, he's a little domesticated.
Hibernation.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a little... Yeah, so he's
not... I was
not,
about to get really
we're
mad.
We're not going down into the ground and digging up the groundhogs or down under the ground there, the woodchucks down there, which we have at the zoo by lots and lots of woodchucks. And most people in their yards have woodchucks. They're great burrs. They will eat your garden. So they're considered pests in a lot of areas. Prairie dogs are also considered pests because of the holes they dig. But yeah, we have lots of groundhogs here, but we don't have a groundhog that does the prognostication. So we know that we do have Beardsley Bart.
I was going to say, but you have Beardsley Bart, who we love so much.
Beardsley Bart was a tradition that we started over 10 years ago.
Has it been that long?
Because 10 years. We had people always calling us up going, are you doing Groundhog Day with a groundhog? Well, we don't have a groundhog that we have in the collection. We do have groundhogs in the ground. So we said, well, what can we do? So we said, well, let's take one of our prairie dogs and make him Beardsley Bart, our prognosticating prairie dog. And so he's been doing that for over 10 years now.
Mm.
Prairie dogs are interesting stuff because they are keystone species. These are animals that in the wild, a lot of animals are keystone species. And the reason they call them keystone is if you remove them from the population, move them from the environment, the environment can start to collapse a little bit because prairie dogs, they do those burrowing and they burrow. The burrows that are evacuated or abandoned are then used by snakes and owls and other mammals. So they become homes for these animals that may not be able to burrow themselves. Their food, their prey items. So things like a black-footed ferret feed primarily on prairie dogs. You remove the prairie dog, the black-footed ferret, which is already an endangered species, becomes extinct. So the prairie dogs are very important for the environment, even though they are considered pests because of the holes they dig, and horses can, people can trip in them. So they are hunted and exterminated a lot, but they are something that's important for the environment. So our prairie dog exhibit here at the zoo is going through a renovation.
I was going to say, how are you doing this then?
Tomorrow morning we're gonna go over there at dawn, and we're going to see what Beardsley Bart has to say. I think with the construction going on, it may be a little more difficult than in the past. But we're gonna do the college try, as we say, to see what Beardsley Bart has to tell us. Prairie dogs do not go into a hibernation. Prairie dogs actually go into a torpor, which means when it gets cold, they will kind of go into a lethargy.
That's kind of like me. I'm a little lethargic for a while. I mean, I still get on the air, and I don't know how I haven't gotten fired yet, but that's kind of what I go into. So what is that called?
Yeah, you go through a torpor.
I'm in a torpor right now. When do we come out of the torpor, Greg Dancho, so I can tell my bosses when they can expect me to be at full force?
When you feel that warm sun in your face. You know?
Okay, so I'll talk to you in April then. All right,
sounds good. So torpor is, so prairie dogs never actually go into a complete hibernation. We know that because yesterday during the day, the prairie dogs are all out.
Yeah.
In their enclosure.
Just like
even though we're doing
mode.
Construction on there.
They're like, listen, we're sort of here, but don't bother me, man. You know?
Yeah. Don't poke me too much because I will wake up.
Exactly.
A hibernating animal can be poked a little bit more. But our prairie dog habitat is being worked on right now. So we're going to go over there tomorrow at dawn and see if anybody is, if Beardsley Bart can give us a sign of what's going to happen. I kind of feel I know what's going to happen. We won't say it now because we want to spoil a surprise, but
right. It's
never really been a surprise. So we'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay.
What's interesting also, we're working with Sacred Heart University Community Theater, and they're going to be doing a Groundhog Day movie presentation or
oh,
screening
cool.
of the film Carne Day. So some of our animal ambassadors, one of our animal ambassadors is going to go there tomorrow with our education staff at 7 o'clock down in Fairfield when they open the thing. And so anybody goes there, we'll be talking a little bit about one of our other furry creatures that we have here, a very cute furry creature here that they can take a look at and learn about. We can't bring a prairie dog, but we can bring something else that's about as cute.
Prairie dogs
are probably one of the most photographed animals here at the zoo.
Interesting. I can imagine, especially with the tunnels you've got in there, too. I'm sure they are one of the most photographed ones. Greg Dancho, very exciting. We'll see what Bart has to say. If he wants to say anything at all, we'll find out.
Yep.
All right.
We'll find out.
Thanks, Greg.
All right.
Appreciate you. I'll talk to you soon. Greg Dantro of the Beardsley Zoo right here on WACC.